Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Las Vegas.
It's more than just a city.
It's a feeling.
It's that feeling of excitement when you spot the lights of the strip out the airplane window.
It's that feeling of awe as you stroll down the boulevard, taking in the sights and sounds.
And it's that feeling of satisfaction knowing that you're in the greatest city in the world.
Over 42 million people from around the world share that feeling every year.
And I'm one of them.
Taking you to the world-famous Vegas Strip and beyond, my name is Jeff, and this is Jeff Does Vegas. Welcome to From the Vault, a special series of episodes of Jeff Does Vegas. Over the 5 years I ran this podcast, from 2019 to 2024, I released over 180 episodes. And along the way, I talked to some very cool Vegas insiders, entertainers, and local experts. I also shared lots of tips and travel advice and explored the fascinating history of the city. I thought it might be fun to take a little trip back in time and reshare some of those episodes. So, whether you're a longtime follower looking for a re-listen, or you're a Vegas fanatic who just happened to stumble across the show, welcome. I hope you'll stick around for this conversation from the vault. The Greek philosopher Heraclitus once said, "The only constant in life is change." And perhaps nowhere else on the planet is that more accurate than Las Vegas. It's constantly evolving, always trying to figure out new ways to bring new people and new revenue to the city. From the late 80s through to the very early 2000s, Las Vegas decided to cater to a group of travelers they'd never attempted to attract before: families. From castle-shaped hotels to pirate battles in the desert to full-blown amusement parks, Vegas made no secrets about who they wanted visiting during that era in its history. But where did it all start? And how did it end up? My guest for this episode is David Schwartz. David is an author and a professor at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who studies gambling and casinos, popular culture, tourism, and Las Vegas history. We talked about some of Las Vegas's early attempts at being family-friendly, what led to the initial push to try to attract families to a city known for adult fun, and the eventual shift away from that strategy. Please enjoy my conversation with David Schwartz.
Even going back to the 50s at the Desert Inn. They have what they call the Kachina Doll House, which was pretty much a daycare center for children. That didn't really take off, but it was there. In the 70s, you had the Youth Hotel at the Las Vegas Hilton, which was also essentially a daycare center where people could drop their kids. And that was there for many years. It eventually got replaced by Star Trek: The Experience. So that's where that was.
And of course, obviously, I mean, the big one would be Jay Sarno making the decision to open Circus Circus, essentially a giant circus on the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, and that's really, that was Jay Sarno's idea, was that, well, I am a family man. I have children and I like gambling and I like looking at scantily clad women. So we should have a casino that has kids games and then topless shoeshine girls and craps all kind of jumbled together. And everybody, you know, who would find that offensive? Because I love all that stuff and I love my kids. So that's great. That's exactly the atmosphere you want.
It's always just struck me as very, very bizarre that Jay Sarno, who put together Caesar's Palace, this palace of opulence where everybody would be treated as a Caesar, and this massive luxurious resort, would go from that to a circus. It's always just seemed so odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, well, originally his idea was this was supposed to be kind of upscale, this adult circus that you could also take your kids to. The problem was he couldn't get funding for the hotel tower. So he had to wait 4 years to build the hotel tower. That's when he got the Teamster money. If he could have built it in 1968, he absolutely would have. So it wasn't a conscious attempt. He was just desperate. He wanted to get away from Caesars, and he just couldn't get enough money to build the hotel to make it that opulent. But, you know, even he lived in a suite at Circus Circus, and it was this two-floor pink flocked wallpaper and everything, just very his idea of opulence. So it is interesting. After Bill Bennett and Bill Pennington bought it, they're the ones who pivoted it to value, value, value. And that was very successful. And, you know, notably, they were much more successful as operators than Sarno ever was.
And not to spend a whole ton of time talking about Circus Circus, but I mean, for the longest time, I know when Circus Circus was in the MGM Resorts portfolio, it was one of the most profitable properties in their portfolio pretty much right up until the time they sold that property.
Yeah, I mean, it always made a ton of money, at least under Bill Bennett and Bill Pennington, because the idea was, at least in the 70s, we charge people $20 a night for a room, we guarantee them a room. And there's a lot of people who want to pay $20 a night for a room, and they each have money. You know, they're not high rollers, but each of them has a little bit of money. And it's actually a much less volatile business than going after high rollers. And you don't know if they're going to show up. You don't know if they need butler service. You don't know if they're going to win or lose. Whereas if you get, you know, 5,000 people in your hotel over the weekend playing $100 at slots, pretty sure you're going to get that money.
So let's talk about the 1990s. I know there's a lot of people in Las Vegas that would probably like to forget that whole era on the Vegas Strip, but Vegas really did make a push towards trying to bring families into Las Vegas. What was it that predicated this push? Was it just simply the city trying to reinvent itself, trying to bring in a different crowd? What was it that caused them to go that direction?
It was a series of things. You know, first of all, you had that recession, like 78 to 82. There was that bad recession in the U.S. and many other parts of the world that wiped out the Vegas business model as it was, which was more dependent on high rollers, more dependent on serious gamblers. So, and if you look at the numbers, you can see the bad gaming debts spiked. You know, they went up really high. So they just weren't getting the money from that. People believed, okay, to reinvent Las Vegas, we have to shift from this high roller model to a more mass market retail model. And Circus Circus under Bill Bennett was really poised to do that. And that's why Circus Circus became in the 80s the most profitable casino company in the world. Because again, they don't have a lot of money, but there's a lot of them, a lot of low rollers. And the other casinos also started to pivot towards this. It's kind of interesting. In 1979, Circus Circus opens up their RV park, and Caesar's Palace opens up the Fantasy Tower, which I think is Nobu now. I used to know this. I might be wrong in that. I believe it's now Nobu, but they opened that up. And that was geared as this, you know, lavish high roller amenities. Which company did better? Circus Circus. Everybody else in the strip took notice of that. And if you look at the 80s, you can see quarter slot machines are becoming the dominant denomination. And really, the table games are starting to recede, even on the strip. The strip is becoming a little bit more like downtown. So that kind of was the base for it. You start seeing that around like 83, 84. By 85, it's pretty much in full swing. 89, Steve Wynn gets the idea for the Mirage. And the idea for that, as you can see in the prospectus, as you can see in the media materials when it opened, was this is a resort for affluent young families. Affluent people with families will come here. This is the first casino in Vegas that is a hotel with a casino attached, not a casino with a hotel attached. And the idea, even for Mirage, again, according to the prospectus, is that this would attract this group of people who hadn't come to Vegas, which were wealthy people who had kids. That was the original plan. It was taking that mass market, something that was called the Burger King Revolution, where basically they put a Burger King in the Riviera, which was the first fast food restaurant, in a casino. And the idea, like, hey, if you want to attract people in this generation, you've got to give them something familiar. You've got to appeal to these people who aren't high rollers. So yeah, Burger King is in. Bacchanal is out.
I had read something about that whole Burger King model and the whole idea of putting a Burger King in the Riviera and making it an attraction. And it always seemed a little bit odd to me that was a thing. But I mean, realistically, that still goes today. There is that giant Taco Bell, the Taco Bell Cantina, right on the strip that's a part of the Planet Hollywood and Miracle Mile complex there that is constantly busy. And I'm always seeing stuff on social media about it with people getting married there and posting videos, TikToks and Instagram and such from there. And so I guess, I mean, they're still doing it to this day.
Yeah. And like I've heard, I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that the In-N-Out is the most profitable In-N-Out in the country. I've heard that the Denny's and that one of the Denny's in the strip is the most profitable Denny's. And the guy at the Riviera who got the idea to do that, Jeff Silver, told me that he saw it from his window. We could see Circus, and he could see people walking past Circus in their $1.99 buffet and going to McDonald's. And he just got the idea, hey, people want that familiarity. And it's also possible that they'd already eaten at the Circus buffet, and that was why they were going past it. But, you know, the idea was a sound one, which is that people, even if they come to Vegas, want something familiar. And yeah, a lot of people say, well, why would you go to Denny's if you're in Vegas? You know, not everybody's a foodie. So not everybody wants that unique experience, and they just want something to eat. They know what it is. They move on.
So after Steve Wynn opens up the Mirage in the late 80s, and as you said, he opened that with the intention of trying to attract affluent people with their families, you see this influx and opening of resorts that are maybe a little bit more blatantly family friendly and a little more budget conscious. I'm thinking of the Excalibur and Luxor and the second incarnation of the MGM Grand with its amusement park and Treasure Island.
Yeah. So Mirage, I mean, families were one level. It was also very much into high rollers and traditional gamblers. You know, they hosted boxing, but a lot of it was building that, filling a 3,000 room resort, you need to have a lot of people. And families were one of the group, of course, business travelers too. Excalibur, which Circus developed, was really an extension of Circus. And that idea saying, hey, we give people the Circus idea of give them a cheap room. There's a lot of them. Add on to that this theming element of old England, medieval England, and making it even more family friendly for people. So I think you have that. You know, Luxor, of course, did evolve a lot. Originally, that was supposed to be their answer to Mirage, but there was a lot of changes. And eventually that property obviously has pivoted a lot. But I think, you know, I remember most fondly the version with the canals and the animatronic camels and all that. So you had that, you know, and of course, Treasure Island is a big one, which is basically Steve Wynn had the kind of GM model for giving people stuff at every price point. So you have the Golden Nugget downtown, you have the Mirage, and then you have Treasure Island, which was Mirage on a $400 million or so budget instead of a $600 million or so budget. You know, basically the same thing, make it even more appealing to families.
And some of these resorts really did try to go the extra mile to bring families in, didn't they? I mean, you mentioned Luxor having the Nile River ride and the animatronic camels. Excalibur was probably the be all and end all of that, between just the fact that they were shaped like a giant castle. They also had the Merlin the Magician and the big dragon show out front with the fire-breathing dragon and all of that going on, which, I mean, again, was obviously intended to bring those families in and give them a little piece of Vegas.
Yeah, you know, and again, the idea was, it's not a dumb idea. There's a lot of people with kids. If you want to expand Vegas from being a 20 million person a year market to a 40 million year person visitor market, it would help to have something for kids to do. So it was not a bad idea.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
I just want to chat a little bit, focus a little bit on Treasure Island, because as you said, I mean, this was Steve Wynn's attempt to maybe go after those families that weren't quite, quote unquote, maybe elite enough to go spend time at the Mirage. As you say, he scaled down the budget, but the hotels were very similarly laid out, similarly sized. But then he took it that extra step by adding the pirate theme to the whole resort.
Yeah, and I think it shows a sense of whimsy, a sense of not taking yourself seriously that maybe casinos have lost, where like, hey, at the end of the day, it's a gambling joint and it's nothing, you know, it's not like it's the Uffizi or something. It's not like it's people are here to necessarily see the fine art, although they did have that at the Bellagio. It's a place for fun. And that is, you know, pretty, I guess, for better or for worse, pirates are seen as being pretty fun.
And something that I came across when I was doing my research for our conversation, and I came across this on YouTube, Steve Wynn put together a 1 hour long TV special called Treasure Island, The Adventure Begins, which was essentially a 60-minute commercial for the opening of Treasure Island.
It's great. It's such a time capsule. It's one of my favorite pieces of Vegas media. You know, basically, this family is coming to Treasure Island. There is the wife who's going to a convention, the husband who's kind of a somewhat disengaged dad, and the young son, who I think is like 12 or so, son, who there's this great shot of them driving down the strip, and the son's like, wow, the flamingo, this is awesome. Like, yeah, like every 12-year-old would be that into that. So it's pretty cool. But basically, the young boy has an encounter with Steve Wynn and then has this magical journey where he's meeting pirates and learning the key to the map. And the whole movie is synchronized to the demolition of the dunes, which happened the opening night of Treasure Island. So it's just incredible cross promotion and just incredibly 3D chess marketing here, where not only are we blowing up the dunes, not only are we tying it to the opening of Treasure Island, we're putting it in a movie.
I mean, it really, it's marketing 101.
It is. And, you know, I mean, it's just a phenomenal document. And for me, you know, one of my favorite parts of it is J.G. Hertzler, who played Martok in Deep Space Nine, had the role of Black Dog, one of the pirates. And it's just great because he has a very distinctive voice. So I think of him in character as Martok going around Treasure Island. It's kind of a cool idea.
Now, as great as all of this was for some of these new resorts and for other resorts in bringing an entirely new crowd into Las Vegas, not every resort or hotel and casino was on board with this particular marketing strategy, were they?
Yeah, and again, it speaks a lot to how they're viewing their niche in the tourist market, where not all of them want to get involved in this. They don't want to alter the amenities. You know, for a while, it looked like this was going to be the future, though. You know, you had Grand Slam Canyon, which is now Adventure Dome at Circus Circus. You have MGM Grand Adventures. When Steve Wynn first bought the Dunes, people said, well, he already has a really nice casino and he already has the family casino. We think he's going to build a theme park there where the Bellagio is now. So imagine that alternate reality where instead of the Bellagio, Steve Wynn builds a theme park. You know, there was talk of bringing, you know, basically MGM Grand Adventures was supposed to be something like Universal Studios is in LA, but in Vegas. That was the original concept, you know, theme park based around this, you know, movie company. And it would be interesting. And, you know, there was also talk of developing something like that at the Desert Inn before Kirk Kerkorian sold that. Originally, you were going to have that at the desert. You're going to have something like that at the Desert Inn too, on the land where Wynn and Encore are now. So it was kind of interesting at this time. People believed that this was the next step. And with Orlando having Universal Studios, of course, Disney, LA having Universal Studios, it didn't seem that far-fetched.
When it comes to the folks who were, I guess you could almost call them anti-family friendly of that particular era in Vegas history, one of the ones that really pops into my brain specifically is the Tropicana. When I was doing some reading and research before this conversation, I came across some pretty interesting pieces of magazine marketing that the Tropicana did that made it very clear that they did not want families coming anywhere near their property, or more so, I guess they wanted to put out the message that, hey, if you want to stay away from families, we're the place for you to come.
Yeah. I mean, and Tropicana was skewing this way, you know, there, but if you look at that property, it was a smaller property. They didn't have the amenities for families. The one asset they had that was, I think, their best asset at the time was their pool area, which when I first came out to Vegas, you know, having grown up in Atlantic City, coming out to Vegas and then seeing they've got the swim up blackjack tables and and again, if I walked the pool now, I'd be like, oh yeah, it's a casino pool. But at the time, my mind was blown. I'm like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this is happening here. You know, this is just like, you know, this is wild. So yeah, so they had a very different identity and they were conscious of that. And again, that's smart. If you can't add a theme park, you're not going to want to get into that business.
So I guess the next question then, or two questions, would be question one, was the family-friendly era for Las Vegas a successful one in that did they manage to increase their visitorship and their tourism and their spending? And the follow-up to that would be, was it the right group of people? Was it the right move? Was this who they wanted to bank their future on?
I'll answer the first question first. You know, yes, absolutely, it did grow the market. 1994 was the single biggest percentage year and the single biggest overall increase in visitation to Vegas throughout its whole history. So nothing they did in the 50s or 60s moved the needle proportionally as much as that. And, you know, again, that's MGM Grand, Treasure Island, Luxor opening, in addition to all the other attractions. So, yeah, I think it did. You know, did it attract the right crowd? I think it did for the time, but I think Vegas keeps evolving. And as you had gaming proliferate in the 90s, they saw the need to go to nightlife, which is going to be antithetical to families. But I think one thing that people lose sight of is there is still a layer of family-friendly Vegas going on. I mean, if you go to the Strip, and for some people, this is a bad thing, but you're going to see a lot of people pushing strollers, you know, and that's the issue, I think, is that most of the affluent travel tends to be not families. Most of the travel family is not relatively affluent people, which it's like, it seems kind of classist to me because, yeah, like working class people, middle class people, they have a right to take their kids someplace too. And, you know, Vegas, there is a lot of stuff here for kids to do in Vegas, although obviously not everything.
You mentioned the shift to nightlife, and I found it very interesting when I was doing some reading that that move happened almost overnight, didn't it? In that these properties that had previously been focusing so hard on bringing in families decided, boom, we can make a ton more money by building these multi-million dollar nightclubs. And where there had never been one of these on the strip before, all of a sudden there was a half a dozen of them.
Yeah, I mean, it did happen pretty quickly because one thing about Vegas is the casinos do pivot pretty quickly. It's kind of interesting how they do that. Yeah, I mean, they did pivot to the nightclubs really quickly because that was something that no other place could replicate. You know, one of the problems with the family-friendly thing is they kind of did it, but they never attracted something that would be like a Universal Studios level attraction where you would tell your family, hey, we're going to Vegas, we're going to do Universal Studios or anything like that. I mean, if you imagine that MGM Grand Adventures, instead of having however many rides they have, it wasn't that many, was an actual huge experience that it would take you 2 days to see all of, you know, that would have been much different. It's just that I think they maybe got cold feet.
And that kind of brings me around to the next thing that I wanted to talk about was the de-theming of the resorts. And I mean, I think MGM Grand probably went a little bit further than anybody else in that, for those that may not be familiar, and you mentioned it briefly there, David, was the amusement park that MGM Grand used to have out the back of the hotel. I mean, in addition, between that and the fact that they were a full-on Wizard of Oz themed resort with Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion, plus a whole Follow the Yellow Brick Road theme leading out to that amusement park, which eventually became the Lazy River, right? I think it's the Lazy River. And is there something else back there where it used to be as well?
Well, yeah, there's the condos and there is Topgolf and other stuff too. And I think they've expanded on the convention space too, but yeah.
And then you've got Treasure Island, which didn't so much do a de-theming, but more of a re-theming in renaming themselves TI and getting rid of the original pirate show, replacing it with the Sirens of TI.
Yeah, with the bad double entendre and all that stuff. To me, it's like, my personal feeling is you cheesy stuff works because half the audience like thinks it's really cool. The other half of the audience will appreciate it ironically. So you get everybody. When you try to go for that edgy, you know, sexy, edgy thing, like some people are going to get it, but a lot of people aren't going to really like it. So I personally like the cheesier stuff. You know, that just works for me because again, people don't come to Vegas to see boring stuff. They come to see different stuff. And what's more different than a pirate battle in the middle of the desert?
Yeah, I'll never forget. My wife and I were, I want to almost say unfortunate enough to experience the Sirens of TI show on a Vegas trip many years ago. And I mean, it was just, there was a lot of eye rolling and a lot of uncomfortable laughter from people around you who had brought kids to see the show. And it was not good.
Yeah. I mean, if you can do it, and you know, I'm not much of an art critic or anything like that, but I remember not really enjoying it. You know, although certainly everybody worked very hard who went to play the roles and all that, but it's just like, I mean, there's a place for that kind of stuff and it's probably not on Las Vegas Boulevard with, you know, everybody driving around you. And so, yeah, I mean that, I think again, if you keep it the kind of cheesy family friendly one, maybe with a little bit of a wink, I think that to me, that works better. You know, if you're going to do it, like just go all in with it. Don't try to make it like, hey, this is some kind of upscale, sexy pirate. Like this is freaking pirates. And the other thing that got me when they de-themed Treasure Island and took the pirates out, that was when Pirates of the Caribbean was a huge franchise. Like lean into it. Like, yeah, we are pirates. Like do this. It's just, that's probably why I'm not a casino executive. That's the way I would have gone. I'm like, yeah, we're pirates. It's fun. Come on down.
So hopping into your time machine or peering into your crystal ball or shaking the magic eight ball, whatever way you want to look at it, do you think Vegas will ever go this far again? I mean, in that, as we said earlier, there are a lot of family-friendly attractions along the strip and around the city and things for people with kids to do. But do you think they'll ever go this far again? Are we ever going to see themed resorts along the lines of, say, the Excalibur that are very blatantly marketed towards bringing families to Vegas? Or do you think that that is done?
I think it's going to remain a layer. You know, again, they have the challenge of filling a 3,000 room hotel, and you need a lot of different people to do that, especially if the business travel is going to be a couple of years in coming back. You know, you need to find a group of people who can show up during the week. In the summer, that could be families, you know, again, and it's not, I think if it's handled well, it can work.
David, thank you so much for once again jumping on the podcast and having this discussion with me. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. I mean, it's great to talk to you about this. It's a great conversation to have. And yeah, this is probably one of the most fun eras of Vegas history, because if you think about where the Strip was in 1990, or even where it was in 1988 and where it was in 1998, it's totally different. So it's kind of amazing that all that happened. Holding my breath and I'm ready to go. I catch you laughing and I'm ready to go. You're holding the match, strike it and ignite my soul. I'm diving and I'm ready to whoa.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.